Hello and welcome back to the Mets Fix podcast. I am Blake Zeff. I'm here with Peter Kaufman and Jeffrey J.B. Ballone. And this was a great victory for the Mets that happened on Thursday. For those of you who are at work or at school, and maybe you were trying to check it out on the MLB app or on the radio or whatever it was, you were rewarded. If you did not see it, go back and try to find it. That was, it had everything you'd want, J.B. We had a big hit from Francisco Lindor, who came off the bench after, being out with the flu. We had late inning heroics. We had defense. We had Marte to Narvaez, the famous Marte to Narvaez connection. We had Edwin Diaz being used in a very strategic way by Carlos Mendoza. A lot of interesting things to talk about. Just a big win. I think it's one of those things that one game doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but it enabled them to salvage the series. So they split the series at home. It enabled them to be a game above 500. It just felt like one of those games that kind of changes how you feel about the team, even though it's just one game, JB.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, I guess if you didn't know about the blocking the plate rule, you got an exercise on that these past two nights, right? Because one night after the whole controversial play, we get multiple plays at the plate. And obviously Starling Marte with the throws, I was looking at some of the names. The last time outfielder had two assists in extra innings in the last 50 years, you have names like Bernard Gilkey, 1992, Endy Chavez, 2006, Dave Martinez, 1991. So as much as Marte deserves the credit, I thought Omar Narvaez, the way he handled around the plate, making sure he wasn't blocking it, getting in good position, getting balls on, one hops. So that was fun with Lindor. He had a great quote. I'll just read into Peter after the game where you're talking about being sick at shortstop. He's like, I was either going to throw up or go number two. I don't think I've heard a guy that honest about being sick. And then he comes up with the big hit, hitting left-handed, slices the ball the other way. I think it's funny with this team because they've been teetering all year. I feel like these closeout victories in a series, it just changes the whole mood, other than the other big news we heard yesterday, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I thought that was a good win.
You overindulged in the dollar hot dog deal? Too many of those.
It may be. Baseball has a way, the baseball gods have a way of sort of making themselves known. And when you saw sort of two big look, the umpiring was brutal this series for whatever reason. Balls and strikes were terrible in the final game of the series. There were some really awful calls, judgment calls. Then you had the epic play at the plate Wednesday night, Alonso sliding into home, and the catcher is literally standing on the plate, which basically was a photograph that was used in a memo that thanks to Andy Martino, we know the memo was sent out to major league teams at the beginning of the season and literally shows a photo of a catcher standing on the plate as something you're not allowed to do. Not only the umps on the ground messed it up, the review booth messed it up, and you're incensed. The Mets lose a game because of that. Then there's this ridiculous play, which I've never seen. It's sort of like, you remember in Little League where like a ball would get hit past like one of the kids that stuck out in right field, like picking out the grass of the dandelions, and the kid like throws his glove and you say, oh, if you throw your glove, it's a triple. And like, there's this weird rules that you can't misuse your equipment. And then we see Pete Crow Armstrong, who like, now I'm glad they're gone. Like after I see this like Bush League move where he slides into second base, holding his helmet to stay on the base, which is not allowed. The umpire misses it. Wendell, to his credit, makes the tag, should have been called out. They got to do it. We need Steve Gelbs to kind of call in to MLB to find out the rule. Yeah. Again, guess what? This umpiring crew once again messed it up and you're incensed. Everything's going against us. And then wouldn't you know it? Two huge plays that determine the game today. Narvaez making phenomenal plays, great throws from Marte on both accounts, two great plays by Narvaez, and he does it the right way. He does it picture perfect, the way they're taught and supposed to. He does not block the plate, and we get both outs. It was phenomenal. And again, baseball, beautiful game. It can bite you when it goes bad, but the baseball gods, they just have a way of getting back to you. You know, I think a Chase Utley, just, you know, laying in his filth after maiming, Tejada. And you know what? The Mets beat the Dodgers. Sometimes it works out.
Did this game, I'm being serious here, Peter, did this game change your opinion and feelings about Omar Narvaez?
No, it doesn't change my feelings, but I also don't, I don't have strongly negative feelings towards Omar Narvaez. I see him for what he is. You know, I'm not looking for a backup catcher. I didn't think they should sign him. I'm happy with Nito, a great defensive catcher who can hit as your backup. I think that's great. I think they overpaid Narvaez, which they doubled down on overpaying McCann. It is what it is, but you know, he's there. I'm not necessarily against Narvaez. He's a double play machine and he hasn't been as good defensively as advertised until today. But no, I don't dislike Narvaez. I didn't necessarily love the signing, but we have him.
I want to point out a few things about that game that I think maybe could get lost in the headlines, right? Because the headline is obviously Narvaez. Headline is obviously Lindor. I want to talk about a couple other things. First off, this one's maybe a little obvious, but Starling Marte made some really good throws. Those were bullets. And I know that Narvaez had to make a good kind of like scoop kind of thing on there, but just wanted to point that out, that it's so nice to have Starling Marte back and seemingly at full strength. The guy just changes the game in so many different ways. His offense, his speed, his arm. You got to love it. Two other things I wanted to note. This team was down 4-0. This team was also down 5-2. It is great to have a team that can be down by pretty big margins, but you're not really worried. You're never out of the game. Last year, I felt like if this team was down 2 runs, 3 runs early, it kind of felt hopeless. And, you know, I don't want to talk too much about woo-woo vibes and energy and things like that, but I feel like there's good energy around this team. And last thing I want to mention is that Mendoza did an interesting thing with Diaz today. He was going to let Reed Garrett, the immortal Reed Garrett, have the ninth inning, maybe, if he could go the distance. And then, you know, I believe he walked Horner to lead off the ninth. And then he brought in Edwin in kind of an inherited runner's situation there, which that was interesting. He didn't want to mess around. This was kind of the big part of the game. He did that. And then he had Edwin staying for a second inning, which I think proved to be a very good move as well. So just a lot of good positive aspects of this game. And I like the way Mendoza managed that game.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree. I think it leads to maybe our next point, the big negative of who started and where things stand based on, you know, learning in the middle of the game. You're talking about good vibes, right? You're watching the game. You're seeing Hauser be terrible. In the past, maybe you're thinking like, oh, this is going to be one of those days. You know, you're at work, you're at school. You don't even have to pay attention. And then, you know, news breaks that the Mets are calling up Christian Scott. So now you're feeling those good vibes. And then at the same time, the offense is putting up runs after, you know, the day before losing 1-0. And again, that's what's so funny with baseball. You know, the whole cliche about, especially in New York, it's 162 one game seasons. It's like last night, I know they're facing a tough pitcher. You know, it's 1-0 and it feels insurmountable. And then today they, you know, that they're able to battle back with 5 runs, but just going, I guess, with the vibes, it was interesting that the timing was the same too, where you hear, here comes the top prospect to save us from Hauser kind of hopefully. And then the team's, you know, scoring runs.
Let's talk about Hauser. This is kind of the big story, I think, actually moving forward here is Adrian Hauser is not pitching like someone who belongs in this rotation. And this is not a rotation full of Cy Young winners, but you generally have a rotation of pitchers who are really holding up their end of the bargain. It feels like every night this team is in it and they're getting decent pitching. Would I like them to go longer? Generally, yes. Although we were gifted with Severino and Quintana the last times around going, well, you know, into the eighth inning. But Adrian Hauser, it's like that old Sesame Street song. One of these kids is doing their own thing. One of them doesn't belong or whatever. Adrian Hauser is just putting up 5 spots, you know, he's letting up 5 runs, 6 runs, and it doesn't belong. And so at a certain point, the team has to make a decision. Now, I want to be clear. Carlos Mendoza was asked after the Thursday game, is this a 5-man rotation? Does this mean that Hauser is out if Scott is coming up? And he said, no. He said, right now, this is a 6-man rotation. And the idea was to give some guys rest, which I think is smart and prudent. But Mendoza did say right now. And another interesting thing about both Mendoza and Hauser was Mendoza was asked, did you see some improvement from Hauser this time around? Did he do something a little better? And you know what Mendoza said? Not really. And isn't it nice to have some honestly, from the manager. I mean, I know, Peter, you're a Buck Showalter stan, but those press conferences would be so maddening where he would invalidate every question that was asked of him. Like, it was the dumbest thing he'd ever been asked and would not answer anything. I liked that Mendoza said not really. He said he's got stuff to work on. And so where am I leading up to with this? Joey Lucchesi deserves a shot. I'm very excited about Scott being up there. Scott absolutely deserves a shot. Put him in the fifth slot. Hauser, I think, could be a middle reliever. The team happens to need multi-inning relievers. So I think that could be a good role for him. But I'm going to tell you also, there are guys in the farm who might give us a better chance to win than Hauser. And it's not just Scott. It's also Lucchesi. There are other guys. I'm glad Buteau got his shot. I don't know what's going to happen when Tyler McGill is back. What I'm trying to say is there's a glut of options here. And Adrian Hauser is not one of the top five.
You know, and it's counterintuitive too, because I love the idea of a six-man rotation. Generally, I like it. The way the game is moving, I like it. I certainly like it for the pieces that the Mets have, and it's counterintuitive, right? When you have DeGrom, Harvey, Syndergaard in his prime, when you have a staff like that, you know, you don't necessarily want to give so much extra time before DeGrom sort of circles back around. But again, we've talked about this a couple times already. There's no one on the staff that right now that you're waiting for his turn to circle around so you get your ace again. You kind of had that a little bit with Senga, but again, Senga is a Japanese pitcher and did much, much better with extra rest. So bring Senga back. I would keep the six-man rotation. And again, it's kind of counterintuitive. You have less depth, but I think with less depth, I like the six-man better. It's just you're less reliant on those guys. And I agree with what you're saying. Like, give Lucchesi a chance. Give Scott a chance to go with it. We've seen what Buteau has been able to do. You're going to get McGill back and just mix these guys in, keep them moving so that when Hauser throws up a clunker for three innings, you're on to the next guy. And yeah, if he has to skip a start here and there and turns into a Trevor Williams, then God bless, because I think that's going to happen in the next week or two here.
I mean, I think that's the role for him. I really do. I think there's no shame in it. This is now, we've talked about this. This is a premium thing, a premium commodity in baseball right now, is the pitcher that can go multiple innings in relief. You need them because starters only go five innings. That's why Reed Garrett, in addition to being really, really effective just in one inning, but it's even more amazing that he goes two innings sometimes. It is so helpful. So if Adrian Hauser can do two or three innings in the bullpen, I think he's probably more valuable there, unless he's letting up five runs, obviously, in which case he's not valuable anywhere. But if he can do that, I think I'd rather have Scott. Listen, we haven't seen Scott in the big leagues yet, so it's premature. But the Scotts, the Lucchesis, the McGills, I think I'd like to give one of those guys a shot pretty soon.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing too is where we are in the schedule, right? They don't have any off days. So Scott last pitched, I think it was, what, 3 days ago? So on Saturday, that would allow him to be on his regular five-day cadence. They then can give everyone else an extra day. And then by keeping Hauser in a rotation, they don't have to, basically Quintana would have been the odd man out, where he wouldn't have got the extra day where everyone else would. So now they can give everyone some extra time, get through this stretch where they don't have any off days. And then, you know, you figure things out in terms of, you know, where's McGill and his rehab starts by then? You know, do you decide? And then how does Scott perform? Do you decide, okay, this was more of a spot start for Scott, kind of a reward for his good, you know, performance, but then we're going to actually send him back down. Remember, Hauser, because he has 5 years of experience, he has to consent to being sent back down. So you're kind of stuck with him, whether you have him as a six-man in your rotation or in the bullpen. I know some people would say, well, who cares? He's not making that much money. Just get rid of him. You're not going to do that with a starting pitcher that's proven over 5 years he can be a start. He offers too much even with his bad start. So
yeah, he's a major league starting. He's not Michael Tonkin. I mean, it's hard to find guys who can throw five.
Exactly. And then to your point, I mean, even as a piggyback starter, right? So let's say you do give someone like Lucchesi a shot, and you know, I think that could be a good combo, Lucchesi and Hauser, something like that. So all those things you can consider. But I think for right now, it's exciting that, you know, Scott's getting rewarded. And we'll see, because I think you're going to mention about Brooks Raley. We know with these injuries, guys can be on rehab assignments. We even saw it with our old friend Max Scherzer. He got scratched recently from one of his starts. Just because they're trending like they're coming back doesn't mean they will come back. And then someone else could get hurt. So I think that's why you're holding tight with what you have. Go with the six man if that's what you want to do, and see in 2 weeks where the staff is at.
I mean, that's right. And just, you know, you mentioned Brooks Raley. Yeah. I mean, that's the other news that came out that is also kind of under the radar, which is Brooks Raley was supposed to be back from the injured list pretty soon. We now find out he's not going to be back on time. And that's a really valuable arm in that bullpen. And just, these arms are just so precious. They're so valuable. So you have to, you know, really be careful with them. All right. Switching gears for a second, because, you know, it's funny, David Stearns, I thought the whole mantra coming in was, let's give the young guys a shot. I want to see what we have. It seems to only apply to Brett Beatty, because hopefully Christian Scott, if he does well, will continue to get his chance. So you hope to see that. And Buto, kind of yes, kind of no, has gotten that shot. But the other person I'm obviously thinking about is Mark Vientos. The guy gets sent back. You know, his OPS is over, what, 930 in AAA. He's got nothing left to prove there. Comes up to the big leagues. The moment is not too big for Mark Vientos. You could try to convince me that Brett Beatty might be a better hitter on certain measures, but when there's a big spot, there are certain guys who don't get intimidated, who don't overthink it, and can perform well in that moment. And Vientos, when he comes up, he's just not intimidated by the big moment. He comes in, obviously everyone knows, hits the game-winning home run. He hit the ball more than that. He had really good at-bats, and of course, he's sent right back down. I get that there's not an exact spot for him on the roster, especially with JD Martinez being there. But at a certain point, the question is going to be Brett Beatty versus Mark Vientos. We talked about this last week. JB, you made the point that, you know, you probably have to give, it's a small sample. Beatty was one of the best hitters in the first half of April. So now that he's been slumping in the second half of April, you can't overreact too much. But once we get to June or something, it does feel like maybe that's a time to kind of compare the two. Vientos deserves a shot some way, somehow. It feels like he's getting jerked around a little bit here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the fact that Beatty's playing well defensively, made another nice play today, that's what's keeping him, you know, afloat, obviously. And, you know, and with Vientos, the problem is, yeah, he's limited. I mean, he can also play first base, but, you know, that's a position where Alonso's not going to take a lot of days off. And then he's a right-handed bat, so it's not like he complements JD Martinez at DH like, say, DJ Stewart could. So, yeah, it's just like, unfortunately for Vientos, it's like he's in this imperfect thing in terms of the positions he plays, the side of plate he bats. So even though he's doing all the right things, now, normally, if you did fully believe in Beatty, this would lead to you look for a trade, because you realize, I mean, the Dodgers did this with Michael Busch, who's been hitting everything for the Cubs. You know, teams move on from prospects, even when they're playing well, because they say, look, we have nowhere to play this guy, you know, so we might as well get something. But yeah, I guess that's your point. By June, you got to decide who is that player that you're moving, and, you know, what value do they each have?
It does remind me of one thing when we look back maybe a decade or so ago, where there were two first base prospects for the Mets. There was Ike Davis. He was the higher draft pick. And then you had Lucas Duda. And it always felt like Ike Davis was in the lead. He was the first one that got the big shot. He had more of the buzz. And then he struggled a little bit. And then Duda was kind of performing even to him. And it became kind of this question where, what are they going to do? And ultimately, the Mets front office had to make that decision. And they surprised a lot of people by going with Duda. And it surprised folks and ended up being the right move. Duda was not a superstar, but he was the Mets, solid Mets first baseman for a couple of years there, including, you know, the National League Championship team in 2015. And as we know, sadly, Ike Davis just, you know, really tailed off. I don't know what the right move is here, but it does remind you a little bit of that. At a certain point, they're going to have to choose one of these guys, Peter.
Yeah, well, Ike Davis, remember, had that phenomenal stretch where he's hitting over 300 with power and then tore some tendon and then got put in a boot and was couldn't move for months, and that Valley gave Duda, Valley Fever did that. I mean, that gave Duda an opening, and even though, you know, we loved Lucas, I wish he could throw from first base to home plate, but God bless him. We loved Duda, and he turned out to be better, and that could be what happens with Vientos and Beatty. I'm not ready to give up on Beatty just yet. He has shown life. You know, we were having this conversation a few weeks ago when we talked about, wow, Beatty is delivering. And I recounted, you know, listening to the broadcast, Keith Hernandez had a great point. He said, well, we'll learn about Beatty. And he kind of was like, yeah, he's off to a hot start. Nice. But we'll learn how he is. If we have the third baseman, he's going to slow down. And then how does he adjust? The league's going to adjust. They're going to shut him down. How does he adjust to the adjustment? So now we're seeing it, and he deserves time to find it. Baseball is a very hard game. give him time. And we went into this season with low expectations. And the thing is, we always do this as Mets fans. And Steve Phillips used to talk about this, the former GM, for years, where he would say you would go into a season in Queens and you'd say, this is the rebuilding year. We got to give the youngsters a shot. And then at the last second, you'd sign a last second free agent. You'd panic. You'd make a trade. And then you'd finish in second place. And you say, we shouldn't have gone for it. We should have rebuilt. This year is supposed to be about seeing if these guys can play. I'm not willing to just sort of cancel Beatty after a rough couple weeks. Let's see if he can play. We know Vientos can hit AAA pitching. I get it. There's nothing more for him to prove. He can focus on his defense, make himself a legit third, major league third baseman, and get some reps at first base to spell Alonso a little bit. Do it. And then if Beatty doesn't work out, at the All-Star break, call him up. You know, Beatty will have added a shot, but I would give Beatty at least through June. I would give him a couple months to see if he can play.
Peter, I agree with that, but you are the guy who often points out that this team will decide that a prospect who can hit somehow can't field, whether it's Alonso, he can't field, and McNeil, where does he play? And then it turns out, you know, if you actually give them a shot, they're pretty good. And so, you know, at a certain point, with my own eyeballs, I did not see Mark Vientos kicking the ball around in the little limited action he had when they brought him up. And Brett Beatty is not a gold glove third baseman. I like Beatty. I'm not against him. I'm just saying, what else does Vientos have to do? This kind of like, there's like this intangible abstract idea that he needs to go down to AAA to work on his defense. What does that mean? And is there a certain measure that he has to like... that he has to live up to, and that once he does that, then he's checked off the box.
You're missing it. I mean, everybody that argues, I get it. Like he is destroying AAA pitching. He had a big home run. He deserves a shot. I get it. But there's a logjam right now, and we're giving Beatty a chance, and you don't want a young player rotting on the bench. If we call him up and he's a pinch hitter and he DHs once a week and he gets one start at third base, that's a waste. So what I say by proving it, no, there's not like a metric I'm looking for. I'm sure the analytic nerds can lay it out, the lateral movement, and they'll rate his lateral movement and his subterranean lateral logjam. But they'll rate that. In the meantime, he gets reps. He gets to play at AAA, play at third base, which he hasn't done every day in the past. Like he hasn't, right? Give him a run of 20 or 30 games where he's playing third base every day. He will improve his fielding. And if Beatty can't hit, and you know, and this team is still at 500 and still within shouting distance of the playoffs, call him up. And he'll be your third baseman for the second half of the season. You know, Beatty, you had your shot. Now you go back, you destroy AAA pitching, and we'll trade Brett Beatty in the offseason for a pitcher.
All right. There is another piece to this infield puzzle, and it is another one that gets fans very animated. During the offseason, I haven't seen a lot of major misses that David Stearns has committed so far. Not that I'm like, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid or anything, but it's hard to point to like some obvious misses, but I have one. Luis Guillorme was a wonderful utility guy for this team. He could do it all. He could play great defense all around the horn. He could even pitch when you needed him to. He could also give you a professional at bat. You know, I could think of specific examples of big hits, big, great at bats. I love the walk that he had one spring training game where it was like 22 or 32 pitches, something crazy like that. I don't think Stearns really knew what he had in Guillorme, because if you just look at the numbers, it's hard to kind of quantify that, but he was just so rock solid. So what he did was he let him go and he signed Joey Wendell, which made sense on paper. Joey Wendell was, you could tell a million things about Joey Wendell. He was fourth in Rookie of the Year voting not that long ago. He was an All-Star not that long ago. He's a really solid major league veteran. He played really well on those Tampa Bay teams. It's really not working out so hot this early in the season. Now I am really willing to give it some more time. I think the guys had like 35 at-bats or something. It's a very small sample. I'm a little surprised that he has not been more sure-handed and right-minded, sharp-minded in the field. That is what has surprised me. You typically don't think of fielding as going through a slump, but I don't know, Peter. What do you think of Joey Wendell?
Listen, if the worst thing that David Stearns does as president of baseball operations is miss on the 26th man on the roster, sort of the backup infielder utility, God bless us all, right? So this is no sort of disrespect to him. I'm frankly willing, you know, part of me wants to just sort of burn Wendell like I did to Bader, and maybe that'll jumpstart him. Maybe he'll be phenomenal. I'll give him the sort of the Midas touch. I think you're exactly right. I don't think Stearns knew what he had in Louis G. I also think that this is just a typical thing that these front offices, they want to bring their guys in so they can be the geniuses that, oh, I found this diamond in the rough. And on paper, Wendell is better on paper than Guillorme. He's a slightly better hitter, although career wise, I mean, Wendell's a career 262 hitter, 696 OPS. Louis G is a career 258 hitter, 672 OPS, about the same. Now, for those of us lamenting Louis G going to Atlanta, he's not burning down the state of Georgia. He's hitting 158. Wendell, I think, is at 222.
Well, Atlanta doesn't know what they have with Louis G. By the way, when we say
no,
Louis
well, he's
G,
starting like at second base. They know what he's getting a run to start at second base, and he's not true. Delivering. So, you know,
when we say Louis G, though, I feel like we're saying Luigi.
Anyway, carry on. So Guillorme, you know, the one thing all the sort of the what we were told about Wendell, the sales job on him was that he's not a speedster necessarily, but he, you know, he has 62 stolen bases in his career, I think, and Louis has four, right? So he's like he's a faster Luis Guillorme. I have not seen, you know, and he comes with a little bit of a better pedigree. He somehow made the All-Star team in 2021. I don't necessarily see it statistically, but he did make the All-Star team one year. He finished fourth in Rookie of the Year voting. So he does have a more of a pedigree than Guillorme. But, you know, sometimes we can trust our eyes, right? And Guillorme made plays. He made a couple errors last year that everyone's jumping on and ruined his nerd casting. Luis Guillorme was a gold glove caliber at second base, shortstop, and third base. He had a cannon of an arm. He could catch a bat with his bare hands. The guy was great and solid, and you could put him in there for a couple days at shortstop, and you're not going to miss anything. And you have Francisco Lindor, right? Joey Wendell he's 34 years old. He looks scared and tentative in the field. He's playing back. He's made a series of missteps. And one thing I fear is that guys come to New York. He's tentative. He makes mistakes. When, you know, you in baseball, in the field, when you're tentative, you make mistakes. And I hope that this isn't a function of him now getting in his head and these things can snowball. Hopefully he's enough of a seasoned veteran. He's good. He's talented. He'll find it. And he can be the sort of the serviceable backup infielder. But, you know, it just seems like it was a needless change. We could have had Guillorme back for $1 million. We paid twice as much for Wendell. I'm not sure why, but, you know, who knows? Maybe down the pennant stretch, you know, we'll be in a wild card race and Wendell will score from first on a double or something. And we'll say, oh, great, great. We had that extra speed.
Well, certainly if the Mets DFA him, and the Phillies or Braves pick him up, then he absolutely will be very effective in September, yeah, in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
I can assure you of that. All right. Well, speaking of veterans, I want to kind of end on this note. We haven't really talked much about it. It's funny. The Mets have JD Martinez back, and it's like the 10th topic on the list that we're getting to. It's been interesting. He has been neither bad enough to anger Mets fans nor dramatically productive enough to get us all worked up and excited, which is fine. I think you can tell when he's up at the plate that he's a professional hitter. He does change the lineup. Generally, it's coming at a good time because, you know, obviously the game on Thursday, the Mets were able to push together seven runs in an 11 inning game. But typically, you know, it just has been a struggle on the offensive side. The entire Cubs series really felt like this was a team that was a little reminiscent of last year with kind of the offensive slumping. But it does feel, JB, like JD Martinez is coming at exactly the right time. And it doesn't look like he's really, you know, he had, it's not setting the world on fire, but it doesn't look like he's missing a step or washed up.
Yeah. Although I'm looking, he's got a 500 average on balls in play, obviously limited amount, but that's some good luck on balls he's put in play. But no, they're going to need him because, you know, it's only a month into the season, but you start to get to the point. You know, we're not that far from that mark everyone uses a Memorial Day, where you start to wonder, are some of these guys who are starting slow maybe again, like Lindor, he's not going to bat 180 like he started, but you start to realize they might have an off year offensively. This is what it's going to be this year. You know, Jeff McNeil, we've always hoped that every other year thing would work. He looks a lot like he did last year. And if you look at the underlying numbers, they're about the same, you know, and he's not making great contact and in terms of hard hits and things like that. I know McNeil usually has been able to get around, but the point is he looks kind of like last year. So they're going to need JD Martinez as part of this offense. And like we've talked about, they've gotten by on DJ Stewart filling in and, you know, either walking or hitting home runs. When he's not getting out, even Vientos coming in on the weekend and add in three hits. So they're getting by. But I think over a long stretch, that's when we'll feel the presence of JD Martinez that, like you said, we haven't necessarily felt yet. We will feel it. But I think what's tough about the offense is the players who are slumping are their backups are the players we've just gone over, the ones we don't feel excited about, right? It's middle infielders, right? So, you know, yes, it's Beatty too, and that whole debate. But I guess what I'm saying is like, you know, McNeil and Lindor, who've had a lot of trouble offensively, they're obviously not guys you're going to now replace. You couldn't replace them with Vientos, is my point, right? So it just made a little awkward where they're getting production is from positions where they're already set or have made a decision with Beatty, and where they're not getting production is all kind of from the same area. You know, we'll see. We'll see. I think there's some Mets fans that have had enough with McNeil. We'll leave that debate for another day in terms of what you would do with that. But I think, you know, to come back to the original point, JD Martinez, he's going to help over the long run. We're going to see it now because you can't keep counting on these kind of spurts of offense that they've been getting from these unsung heroes. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you that your top players aren't producing how you expect them to.
You know that I'm not going to allow an attack against the flying squirrel to stand. We will always debate Jeff McNeil. I love to do deep dives of Jeff McNeil's numbers. I get it, right? He does look better the past week or so, right? He's starting to hit the ball. Let's give him a chance. And this is what I love, sort of digging into his record as a hitter. 2,500 major league at bats, he's hitting .297. Then you drill down into five seasons of, and I don't have his minor league numbers in front of me. It's five seasons in the minor leagues. He has a plus three, over 300 average, right around 300. His senior year at Cal State, he hit .320. In the Cape Cod League before his junior year, he hit .302. The guy hits 300. That's what he does. He's hit, I probably only hit 300 in high school, but he hit 300. Every level he gets at, he hits above 300. And he's a 297.
Don't start doing it in the major leagues.
Yeah. He's a batting champion, right?
Yeah. A couple of years ago. I mean, yeah,
297 you know, career hitter.
Hit 40 home runs a couple of years back. I don't want him playing second base.
He's at 257, you know, right now. No, I get what you're saying. It just like we were saying with JD Martinez, there are guys that are professional hitters. But I guess what I'm saying is that it just seems like you brought in JD Martinez to DH. He's going to fill in that spot. Obviously, Alonso is Alonso at first. Now you got Marte playing like Marte in right field. You know, Tyrone Taylor, we've enjoyed him as a fourth outfielder coming in. You start looking, where is their opportunity to kind of improve the offense? I think that's why it comes back, you know, to McNeil for some, because you could argue, you know, he doesn't necessarily fit the long term. He's not so entrenched there that it's like the end of the world. It's just like I was saying before, unfortunately, that's the one position you don't have a Vientos who's just sitting there waiting and hitting that can fill in and maybe take his spot. And I think that that's just the position they're in.
It would be a lot different if Ronnie Mauricio were healthy. I think we'd have a much different. I think there's an actual chance that McNeil would be your utility player right now.
Well, listen, also, if Luis Angel Acuña and Jet Williams find their stroke in the second half of this year, the conversation could change also. But the good news, guys, is we can debate this topic all year long, and I know we will. Jeff McNeil versus the young guys. What's going to happen at second base for the long term? We will have this argument. Thank you guys for being part of it. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you to our awesome producer, Andrew Claudio, for all your help with everything. We're going to keep watching these games. We're going to keep debating Jeff McNeil. Thank you all, and let's go Mets.